Lehrabschlussprüfungen für Kauffrau, Kaufmann. Englisch Hörverstehen, Serie Gamma 2. Each part of this listening comprehension will be played twice. Task A. Look at the notes below. Listen to the monologues. Fill in the missing information. You now have 20 seconds to look at the tasks. Now, listen. 1. A security announcement.
May I have your attention, please? A protest is taking place in front of our school. The protest is against the government and does not seem to be violent, but some protesters are carrying spray paint cans. All teachers, please lock room doors and close window blinds if currently teaching on floors D, J, and W. Keep away from doors and windows. Remain in the classrooms until you are notified by the police department. Then you can move back.
You are going to hear the text again in about 5 seconds.
May I have your attention, please? A protest is taking place in front of our school. The protest is against the government and does not seem to be violent, but some protesters are carrying spray paint cans. All teachers, please lock room doors and close window blinds if currently teaching on floors D, J, and W. Keep away from doors and windows. Remain in the classrooms until you are notified by the police department. Then you can move back.
Now go on to part 2. 2. A message on an answerphone.
Hello. Thank you for calling Beauty to Go Clinic. Our offices are closed. We are open Tuesday to Friday from 9:15 a.m. to 1:45 p.m. and from 2:50 p.m. to 6:30 p.m. If you wish, you can send us an email to b_go.info@clin.co.uk. I'll repeat b_go.info@clin.co.uk. In case of an emergency, please call 0044-3471-009-876. Thank you.
You are going to hear the text again in about 5 seconds.
Hello. Thank you for calling Beauty to Go Clinic. Our offices are closed. We are open Tuesday to Friday from 9:15 a.m. to 1:45 p.m. and from 2:50 p.m. to 6:30 p.m. If you wish, you can send us an email to b_go.info@clin.co.uk. I'll repeat b_go.info@clin.co.uk. In case of an emergency, please call 0044-3471-009-876. Thank you.
This is the end of Task A. Task B will begin in about 20 seconds. Task B. You will now listen to Matt Abrahams interviewing Kate Myers, a well-known language expert. For each question, mark the best answer A, B, or C. Tick one answer only. You now have 30 seconds to look at the task. Ready?
Hello, I'm Matt Abrahams. Welcome to Think Fast, Talk Smart, the podcast. Having to communicate in a language other than our native tongue can be quite a challenge, but there are some specific strategies non-native speakers can use to handle challenges, as well as advice that they can follow to improve their fluency. Today we will speak with Kate Myers, a well-known language expert, about these specific strategies. Kate, thanks for being here and sharing your expertise.
My pleasure.
So let's start at the beginning, Kate. What are some of the challenges you see non-native speakers struggling with?
A lot of people will try to be perfect, and when they're not perfect, they worry about it. Or they try to be perfect by writing everything down and trying to memorize it. Another thing that I see people struggling with is not knowing how to improve. They have a lot of faith in books or courses and doing stuff that's not really interesting or motivating to them. And if you're not doing something that's interesting or motivating, it's not going to improve you.
Do you recommend specific tools that help non-native speakers become more comfortable and confident?
There are a lot of tools that we have in our pocket, with our phones and things like that. Recording yourself making a natural conversation, saying certain things, will give you an objective view as to what you're doing. And we're all embarrassed about how we sound on recordings, but nobody else has to listen to it. The key thing here is don't write it down. Reading something is a very different skill from saying something. If you want to be able to read something, then practice that. If you want to be able to talk freely, then practice that. So just use your phone right there. Take full advantage of that tool.
I really think this notion of practice and using technology can help. A lot of times, people are so busy thinking about what it is they want to say, they don't take the time to practice. And using technology can be really, really helpful. So I tell my non-native students, if you need to write things out just to get the flow and the grammar right, that's okay. But then from that, create an outline and practice from the outline. When we memorize, we not only increase our cognitive load, what we have to remember, but we also have created the right way to say it, and that puts added pressure. So I'm a big fan of using outlines, only using keywords. Have you found outlines to be successful in the work you do and the folks you work with?
Absolutely. I think the outline is the only way to do a presentation. The ideal thing is to be able to have that outline in your head, to know what you're going to say. The best speakers that you see, they do have that outline in their head, and they're just going from that, and they can move things around. It takes a long time to get to that position, but the first step is writing the outline out, working from there. I think it's a really good choice for the first step.
A best practice that I find helpful, and I'd love to get your opinion on it, is many of my students are so worried about not having the right word. And what I suggest is do the best you can and be comfortable repeating yourself in a different way. So you might make a statement, but then tell a story or give an example that supports it. So if I didn't understand the point the first time you said it, the story helps me figure it out. Have you found that as a best practice that can be helpful?
Yes, simplifying it. This is what the greatest communicators do. They explain science or they explain technology in a very simple way, so that people can understand them.
Can you provide me with another best practice that you've come across to help non-native speakers feel more comfortable?
Sure. Another thing to do is to just cut off your native language and immerse yourself in the English that you find interesting. Watch TV in English, not your native tongue. Getting your news, if you can do that, in English, then you're moving forward in a really important way.
Absolutely. Well, Kate, thank you so much for your vast experience you've shared with us. Clearly, there are things that people can do who are trying to communicate more effectively in speaking. I hope that those listening are coming away with some very specific tips, tools, and best practices that they can use. Thank you so much.
Thank you. It's been my pleasure.
You are going to hear the text again in about 10 seconds.
Hello, I'm Matt Abrahams. Welcome to Think Fast, Talk Smart, the podcast. Having to communicate in a language other than our native tongue can be quite a challenge, but there are some specific strategies non-native speakers can use to handle challenges, as well as advice that they can follow to improve their fluency. Today we will speak with Kate Myers, a well-known language expert, about these specific strategies. Kate, thanks for being here and sharing your expertise.
My pleasure.
So let's start at the beginning, Kate. What are some of the challenges you see non-native speakers struggling with?
A lot of people will try to be perfect, and when they're not perfect, they worry about it. Or they try to be perfect by writing everything down and trying to memorize it. Another thing that I see people struggling with is not knowing how to improve. They have a lot of faith in books or courses and doing stuff that's not really interesting or motivating to them. And if you're not doing something that's interesting or motivating, it's not going to improve you.
Do you recommend specific tools that help non-native speakers become more comfortable and confident?
There are a lot of tools that we have in our pocket, with our phones and things like that. Recording yourself making a natural conversation, saying certain things, will give you an objective view as to what you're doing. And we're all embarrassed about how we sound on recordings, but nobody else has to listen to it. The key thing here is don't write it down. Reading something is a very different skill from saying something. If you want to be able to read something, then practice that. If you want to be able to talk freely, then practice that. So just use your phone right there. Take full advantage of that tool.
I really think this notion of practice and using technology can help. A lot of times, people are so busy thinking about what it is they want to say, they don't take the time to practice. And using technology can be really, really helpful. So I tell my non-native students, if you need to write things out just to get the flow and the grammar right, that's okay. But then from that, create an outline and practice from the outline. When we memorize, we not only increase our cognitive load, what we have to remember, but we also have created the right way to say it, and that puts added pressure. So I'm a big fan of using outlines, only using keywords. Have you found outlines to be successful in the work you do and the folks you work with?
Absolutely. I think the outline is the only way to do a presentation. The ideal thing is to be able to have that outline in your head, to know what you're going to say. The best speakers that you see, they do have that outline in their head, and they're just going from that, and they can move things around. It takes a long time to get to that position, but the first step is writing the outline out, working from there. I think it's a really good choice for the first step.
A best practice that I find helpful, and I'd love to get your opinion on it, is many of my students are so worried about not having the right word. And what I suggest is do the best you can and be comfortable repeating yourself in a different way. So you might make a statement, but then tell a story or give an example that supports it. So if I didn't understand the point the first time you said it, the story helps me figure it out. Have you found that as a best practice that can be helpful?
Yes, simplifying it. This is what the greatest communicators do. They explain science or they explain technology in a very simple way, so that people can understand them.
Can you provide me with another best practice that you've come across to help non-native speakers feel more comfortable?
Sure. Another thing to do is to just cut off your native language and immerse yourself in the English that you find interesting. Watch TV in English, not your native tongue. Getting your news, if you can do that, in English. Then you're moving forward in a really important way.
Absolutely. Well, Kate, thank you so much for your vast experience you've shared with us. Clearly, there are things that people can do who are trying to communicate more effectively in speaking. I hope that those listening are coming away with some very specific tips, tools, and best practices that they can use. Thank you so much.
Thank you. It's been my pleasure.
This is the end of Task B. Task C will begin in about 20 seconds. Task C. Listen to Simrat Vedantam, host of the podcast Hidden Brain, talking to Ethan Mollick about what the world of work can learn from the world of games. Please fill in the gaps in the sentences below with a correct form of the keyword or keywords. Use one or two words. You now have 1 minute to read the sentences below. And here we go.
The world of work and the world of play are different. When we are at work, we are supposed to be serious. Play is the opposite of that. We play games to relax, to have fun. In his research, Ethan Mollick asks if these two worlds have more in common than we think and whether the world of work has a lot to learn from the psychology of games. Ethan, welcome to Hidden Brain.
Thank you for having me.
Games are everywhere, aren't they?
Yeah. They really are part of who we are. One type of game that overshadows all the others is video games, of course. In a survey, people in three Canadian cities were asked to identify a photo of the Prime Minister of Canada and a photo of a character from a famous Nintendo video game. And far more people were able to identify Mario than Stephen Harper, who was the Prime Minister at the time.
Wow, people are recognising a fictional Italian plumber in a game rather than the Prime Minister of their own country.
Yes. No wonder the business of video games is so big. Bigger than movies, bigger than music. It's the biggest entertainment industry by far. Its influence is everywhere, and the money flowing into it is huge.
Now, the world of work. Big numbers of people believe that jobs are not just boring, but pointless. That if their jobs disappeared tomorrow, no one would notice.
Yeah, many people don't see any meaning in their work. And that can be incredibly demotivating. I remember I used to have a job where I cleaned up parking lots at shopping centres, both gross and boring. So I'd start to turn work into a game. I thought, how many cigarette butts can I get before this song is over, to turn this boring work into something more interesting? Do you know what I mean?
Yes, indeed. Many people love games and fun. Many people think of their job as being donkey work or repetition. But many dimensions of games look a lot like work. Another reason why people love games is they often incorporate stories.
In our lives at work, we're not heroes. There's not a story of progression. But humans love stories. And games give you a meaning for your work in that storyline. You're not just clicking a button, you're saving a planet. You're not just moving a mouse and completing some tasks, you're helping your team win. You're often the hero, improving something in some way.
Games also offer us a chance to try things out and take chances. They allow us to simulate life, but with lower risks.
Yeah, failure is how learning actually happens. It is about doing things better the next time. When you break something, you actually understand something deep about how it works. But if your startup company fails, that feels pretty bad. If you fail in a game, though, maybe that was interesting. And now you're going to do something different next time.
Right, so if you get killed in a game, you start over. If you lose a match, you come back and play again tomorrow. You mess up at work, you could get fired.
Exactly. And that makes us less willing to take the risks that are both important for learning and work. Also, think of the earliest video games, Pac-Man or Mario Brothers. The levels start easy and get harder and harder until you lose. And then you play again. They're adjusting up to your difficulty level. Work does not adjust the difficulty. In work, if our tasks are boring or stressful, it's likely to be boring or stressful for a while.
Something stressful about work life is that it is messy. There are unwritten rules about things you're expected to do, and then again, there are rules that nobody respects. Games are different. They often come with a clear set of rules. They give us clear feedback on where we are in the game, what happens when we reach certain levels, and how we can improve.
Definitely. So thanks to the rules, we know what we're supposed to do. Finally, in the game, we all start off at the same level. What happens then follows the rules of the game. Nobody's starting out with a leg up because of who they are or what school they went to. Anyone can win, and that's a story we love. When somebody who came from maybe a difficult background turns out to be a champion.
Ethan, thank you for being here.
You are going to hear the text again in about 10 seconds.
The world of work and the world of play are different. When we are at work, we are supposed to be serious. Play is the opposite of that. We play games to relax, to have fun. In his research, Ethan Mollick asks if these two worlds have more in common than we think and whether the world of work has a lot to learn from the psychology of games. Ethan, welcome to Hidden Brain.
Thank you for having me.
Games are everywhere, aren't they?
Yeah, they really are part of who we are. One type of game that overshadows all the others is video games, of course. In a survey, people in three Canadian cities were asked to identify a photo of the Prime Minister of Canada and a photo of a character from a famous Nintendo video game. And far more people were able to identify Mario than Stephen Harper, who was the Prime Minister at the time.
Wow, people are recognising a fictional Italian plumber in a game rather than the Prime Minister of their own country.
Yes. No wonder the business of video games is so big. Bigger than movies, bigger than music. It's the biggest entertainment industry by far. Its influence is everywhere, and the money flowing into it is huge.
Now, the world of work. Big numbers of people believe that jobs are not just boring, but pointless. That if their jobs disappeared tomorrow, no one would notice.
Yeah, many people don't see any meaning in their work, and that can be incredibly demotivating. I remember I used to have a job where I cleaned up parking lots at shopping centres, both gross and boring. So I'd start to turn work into a game. I thought, how many cigarette butts can I get before this song is over, to turn this boring work into something more interesting? Do you know what I mean?
Yes, indeed. Many people love games and fun. Many people think of their job as being donkey work or repetition. But many dimensions of games look a lot like work. Another reason why people love games is they often incorporate stories.
In our lives at work, we're not heroes. There's not a story of progression. But humans love stories. And games give you a meaning for your work in that storyline. You're not just clicking a button, you're saving a planet. You're not just moving a mouse and completing some tasks, you're helping your team win. You're often the hero, improving something in some way.
Games also offer us a chance to try things out and take chances. They allow us to simulate life, but with lower risks.
Yeah, failure is how learning actually happens. It is about doing things better the next time. When you break something, you actually understand something deep about how it works. But if your startup company fails, that feels pretty bad. If you fail in a game, though, maybe that was interesting. And now you're going to do something different next time.
Right, so if you get killed in a game, you start over. If you lose a match, you come back and play again tomorrow. You mess up at work, you could get fired.
Exactly. And that makes us less willing to take the risks that are both important for learning and work. Also, think of the earliest video games, Pac-Man or Mario Brothers. The levels start easy and get harder and harder until you lose, and then you play again. They're adjusting up to your difficulty level. Work does not adjust the difficulty. In work, if our tasks are boring or stressful, it's likely to be boring or stressful for a while.
Something stressful about work life is that it is messy. There are unwritten rules about things you're expected to do, and then again, there are rules that nobody respects. Games are different. They often come with a clear set of rules. They give us clear feedback on where we are in the game, what happens when we reach certain levels, and how we can improve.
Definitely. So thanks to the rules, we know what we're supposed to do. Finally, in the game, we all start off at the same level. What happens then follows the rules of the game. Nobody's starting out with a leg up because of who they are or what school they went to. Anyone can win, And that's a story we love, when somebody who came from maybe a difficult background turns out to be a champion.
Ethan, thank you for being here.
This is the end of Task C. You now have time to complete your answers. This is the end of your English Listening Comprehension exam. Please stop writing and hand in your paper.